Hey guys, what's up? Travis here with another NRL Hunter podcast. I am here with my good friend from Canada, eh? Mr. Tyler Beckley. Tyler, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you, Travis?
I'm very good, man. I'm stoked to have you on the show today. I know we've been talking about this for a little bit, but our schedules have been a little bit crazy. But I'm super glad to have you here.
Yeah, no, happy to be here and excited to come on and kind of talk about what we're doing up here.
Absolutely. So, for our audience that may or may not know who you are, you want to give them a quick rundown of what you do and how you're associated to the NRL?
Yeah, you bet. Kind of start with myself personally. My family and I, we own a guest ranch resort here in British Columbia. That's what I do it for a career. We run a cattle ranch here as well. So the property is a couple thousand acres, and then we've got a bunch of lease land up here. My main business, people come and stay with us during the summer and horseback ride and fly fish and kind of do all the outdoor activity stuff. So that's kind of what we that's what we do. I grew up in the outfitting business. So my grandfather, my dad was an outfitter. So that's kind of my background, obviously, was heavier to the hunting side. And so that's kind of where we got started. Once the long range shooting stuff kind of started coming along, we started having hunters showing up that had some equipment, and it was all real new back then. And like everybody, were kind of trying to figure it out. I remember when we were outfitting for—I mean, if we had a guide let somebody shoot something past 200 yards, like, oh my God, they were probably going to get fired. But we kind of got started. That's kind of where I got started, and my interest was. And so it was strictly for hunting purposes. I mean, initially it was even. It wasn't even for myself. It was more so I kind of understood what my clients were trying to do, so to speak. From that, obviously, kind of just drew an interest. Heard about PRS. Kind of this would have been kind of 17, 2017, 2018. So I was a little later to the party. Convinced a buddy to come to a match with me, and that was kind of it. So that's kind of where we got started. And then obviously, when you fired up with the NRL, that was perfect for me, because that was just kind of a perfect synergy of the hunting side coming together with the shooting side. And so it's good. We've been shooting with you guys for a couple of years. Obviously, I have a my son Chase, who some of you guys know. He shoots with me. He's a kid, so he picks up stuff fast, and I hate to say it, but he's getting better and better all the time. So last year, it was all I could do to kind of stay ahead of him, or at least
He's a
run
stud.
with him a little bit. But I'm afraid he's pulling away now. So he's going to be helping me at the match, and I'm sure you guys see us both out shooting. So that's kind of what we've been doing.
No, that's awesome, man. You and Chase are like one of the father son, not necessarily a team, but you guys like come out to matches together, and it's such a great thing to see the family camaraderie and how you guys kind of work well with each other, but kind of let each other do your own thing. And his performance has like super excelled, like faster than I've seen in a lot of people in a very short amount of time. And he's a stud. He's a shooter for sure. And I mean, you're no slouch yourself, man. You can hammer some steel.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed it in I really noticed it in my own performance, in that I have to try really hard to eke out a couple more points, and we'll go shoot with somebody else, and it's good to get new influences and stuff, and somebody will give me some advice, and I mean, I have to work at it, right, to change a habit or something. And Chase doesn't. He's a kid, so it's like, oh, you want me to do it that way? Okay, I'll do it that way. They pick stuff up so fast, and we teach lots of people. We teach people to ride and how to fish and stuff. And I mean, kids just absorb stuff so much faster than we do when we get old. I don't know why we don't, but we're tougher to teach the older we get. So it's kind of cool working with a kid, especially as just physically he gets a little bit stronger. you know, when he was a little bit smaller, there was just some limitations on what he could physically do. But now as he grows up a little bit, it's just, you know, every shoot we see him just kind of progress a little bit. So that's cool. And I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of at the philosophy. My Chase is 14, you know, in 4 or 5 years, he's going to be off doing other stuff with his buddies and chasing girls. And so if he wants to do something with dad, it's great while it lasts. So I'm all in.
That's awesome. That's very cool. Yeah. So does he help out at the ranch as well and do, you know, ranch hand type stuff and guiding stuff and all of that as well?
Yeah, he does. So, like on the resort side, we sleep about 50 people. I keep about 12 guides on staff. And they do everything from take trail rides to guide fishermen to whitewater rafts. And last year, over the summer, was kind of Chase's. He'd done a part-time stuff before, but he was a full wrangler last year. So he did the whole deal. So he's guiding trail rides and doing the whole thing. And it's good. I mean, I don't know, in our business, we meet a lot of people, a lot of new people, and Chase kind of grew up in it. And so that's why he's as, I don't know, personable, I guess, maybe. He's very comfortable with people. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So I want to get back to that. But before we do, I want to talk about what's leading us up to that story. So the NRL Hunter, we've been around for a few years. I've talked about wanting to have a match in Canada for the past couple of years. And you were finally able to make it happen for the 2024 season. So you are going to be hosting the first ever NRL Hunter match in Canada. And that is super exciting for us.
Yeah, we're excited too. I mean, obviously we've been talking about it for a while. And I'm very fortunate in that we're putting the match on at home. So that was easy for me. You know, I didn't have to go out and source land and stuff. So we're super excited to bring the NRL to Canada. You and I have talked about this, but for all the reasons that I was interested in the NRL, I think Canadians in general, the shooting public up here, I think it's a great fit for the Canadians. So we're super excited about it.
Nice. So what can, I mean, you've been to several NRL Hunter matches stateside all over, you know, different states and seen different terrains and so on and so forth. What could we expect? Like, pretend I'm coming as a competitor. Obviously, I'm going to be there as the NRL. I've never been to Canada. I've never hunted in Canada. I don't know what the terrain is. What could somebody like myself expect from your event?
Yeah. I mean, Chase and I have been working on a course fire. So it's kind of like I'm starting to see what is going to be different. Probably the biggest thing that, at least for some of the stages, that's just going to, I have not seen anywhere else. We have trees. We have trees everywhere. So it's actually an obstacle for us to, you know, find shooting paths and stuff like that. Because there are trees everywhere. So, you know, if we go, some of the venues are very, very open. So hiding targets is maybe a little bit trickier. That is not going to be a problem here. So just that aspect, the property itself, we kind of sit up on a plateau. We're going to be shooting on that plateau. We're bordered on the north side by a big river. And then we've got a creek on the other side. So it's very picturesque. We're looking right out at the main range of the Rockies here. And we think we're going to be able to put together a super cool course of fire, you know, couple of the stages, you know, the venue is just spectacular. We run a farm as well. We put up a bunch of hay. So we've got some open country as well. So it's going to be a pretty good mix. It's not super physical. I mean, we're going to have a couple miles over the full course, a couple steep pitches, stuff like that. But you're going to want, you know, you're going to want your hiking boots and stuff. You're not going to want to do it in tennis shoes, but we're not, it's not a super big pull or anything like that. So, that's kind of what it's going to look like.
It sounds like you're going to give Montana a run for the most picturesque match.
Yeah, we'll give them a run for that for sure. I've shot Belt, awesome venue. Montana and British Columbia, I mean, we're only, that's actually one of our closest matches, but that time of year, it's super green, super lush. We're still going to have, we're still going to have snow in the mountains. So the Rockies will have snow in them still. But yeah, it's very, very pretty that time of year.
Nice. So your match has already opened up, and probably about 80% of the people attending your match are Canadians. And one of our goals is to bring more of the U.S. market up to Canada. But one of the objections that I've been hearing is people don't know how to bring their weapon systems, their hunting rifle, into Canada. How hard is that? Is it, I mean, is there a lot of, you know, BS that you have to go through, or is it pretty simple? Can you explain that process for everybody?
Yeah, you bet. So obviously we did it all the time as outfitters. British Columbia has a tremendous amount of outfitters. You walk through any airport in the fall here and half the guys are, you know, wearing camo. So it's not at all unusual. Every border guard in our region sees firearms often. The process itself, we've got it posted on the webpage, on our match page. Super simple. You literally go in and print off a one-page form. I think it's maybe two-page form. You fill out your general information. They want the make, model, caliber of your rifle, and that's about it. There are a couple little tweaks that makes your life easier. Bring two copies. They're going to want to keep a copy, and don't sign the paper until you're in front of them. They want it signed. They want to verify that your ID matches the signature. So literally one page of paper. They'll ask you to come in. Some of the time they want to see the rifle. Sometimes they don't. And you'll literally sign the right or sign the paperwork, and they will, you'll pass on your way. There are a couple don'ts, however, and I think this is, you know, this is the part that, you know, yeah, there's a couple don'ts. So this is probably the important part. Long guns, bolt guns, shotguns, no problem whatsoever coming to Canada. Do not try and bring a pistol. It's very, very restricted up here, and they just don't allow it. So just don't do it. The other thing, and suppressors up here, we can't have suppressors either. So don't try and bring a suppressor. Other than that, it's super, super simple. There are a couple things just with international borders. So if you have a criminal record, stuff like that.
Of course.
Yeah, but yeah, other than that, it's super simple, yeah.
What about an AR-15 style platform?
I wouldn't.
Okay.
Semi-autos are legal here, but if you don't have to, it's just going to be more paperwork. I just wouldn't bother.
Yeah. Gotcha. So stick to the bolt guns.
Stick to the bolt guns, yeah. And they're going to view it as a hunting gun. So super simple. Whether you drive in or fly in, it's not going to matter. You're still going to clear customs here. If you're driving, I mean, I come and go through the U.S. all the time. We travel every time, every match we go to, we're crossing a border. So
right.
I do it on the reverse side. So the borders that you're going to drive across, like, they're super good to deal with. We see it all the time. Flying to some of the major centers, now you're dealing with TSA and you have the same bullshit that you guys have in the U.S. So gotcha. Even on the resort side, I find to fly in the U.S. and drive in is simpler. Spokane, Washington, Kalispell, Montana, they're pretty close for us for a drive. So super easy to get a reasonable flight into one of those airports, rent a car and drive up. There is an airport right here in Cranbrook. You can fly in, we'll even pick you up. It's 10 minutes from the ranch. But anybody needing, because like I said, this is kind of what we do on the resort side. So anybody needs advice on that side, I'm happy to kind of point them in the right direction.
Nice. Now, for TSA, when you fly, you're limited to 11 pounds of ammo. Are you limited to ammo when you drive across as well?
No.
Okay.
You are. You are, actually. 5,000 rounds.
If you're bringing 5,000 rounds to a hunter match, we got a problem.
If you're bringing 5,000 rounds, it better be for me. Yeah,
right. Okay, awesome. So it sounds like getting across, fill out the paperwork, have a duplicate, sign it in front of the agent, and that's pretty much it. I mean, it sounds pretty simple.
It's literally that simple. Yeah. Super simple. It's I can't emphasize enough. Don't bring a handgun. Don't bring anything that's illegal. But standard bolt guns, no problem whatsoever.
Right. So for those of you guys that are planning to like drive across in your personal vehicles or whatnot, I know a lot of you guys carry pistols in your, glove compartment or whatever. Leave all of that stuff at home. Leave all of the, things that you're not going to need for a hunter match. Just leave all of that stuff at home. There's no reason to risk it. Let's just go to Canada and have some fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
So one of the really cool things that I liked about, not liked, that I was excited about, I guess, was you also made it real simple for me, being a guest at the ranch. You guys have on-site facilities for people that don't want a hotel, that want to be on property. How does all of that work?
Yeah. So because we're doing it right here at the ranch, we're a resort. We sleep about 50 people. We've got a big main lodge that's, like 8,000 square feet. It's got a dining room. It's got a big bar, lounge area. So we're set up like a high-end resort. So we're making those facilities available to the shooters. I do still have some cabins available. And what it does, I mean, on a bunch of levels, it kind of gives us some place. We've done other shoots here, and the part that I think our facility really kind of is one more added benefit. There's kind of a social aspect that goes with it. So usually you go to a shoot, maybe you hang out for a drink or something after, but for the most part, everybody has to leave kind of, right. And you all have to go somewhere. Here, everybody's staying here for the most part, or a percentage of them are staying here. So it kind of has a cool social aspect to it. From the match side, like dinners and the banquet and stuff, obviously that's easier for us. We have all the facilities and everything to do that all in-house right here. So it just, like I said, I mean, we're doing big events anyways. We're just adding we just have the capacity to do a shooting event and kind of tie it into what the resort's already doing. So like I said, we've done a couple before, and it's kind of a cool dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, so everybody knows I'm staying there. I hope as many of you guys that are listening that are going can stay there as well, because when we get together, it's always a good time. And he says he has a fully stocked bar, so that's even better.
Full bar, yeah. Unfortunately, I can only accommodate, X number of people. Right. So once we do fill a while, at any point, we do have, we're in the industry, so we have codes for a couple of the local resorts that have great accommodations too. So anybody looking for accommodation stuff, we can get you set up. We're going to have some options to do some of the meals here at the ranch, and then Cranbrook and Kimberly are both kind of resort ski towns, so lots of cool restaurants and pubs and stuff it's kind of a cool weekend for everybody.
Sounds like a great getaway for the entire family.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what we do most of the time anyways. So, anybody wanting to bring wife or kids, the other thing that this region has, we have, I think there's 11 golf courses within 15 minutes of my house here. Two of which are in top 25 in Canada. So wow. There's some really world-class golf here. And early May, they will be in perfect condition, and there will not be a soul on midweek. So so anybody wants to add a day on front or back and play a couple of rounds of golf, that's kind of a cool add-on here too.
That sounds awesome. Hold on, you said front or back, but on the back end of your match you have something else that's pretty cool that the NRL hunters have an opportunity to do.
Yeah, so anybody that's interested, we have availability to do some black bear hunts. So we've kind of teamed up with a couple local outfitters, And anyone wants to come up and shoot a big black bear, we can do it. So bear hunts are different in all different kinds of places. So just kind of a little bit about the region. This little piece that we're in, it's not that little, but kind of southeastern BC, northern Idaho, has the highest density of black bears of anywhere on the planet. I think our season's like two bears. Everybody, a general open tag can shoot two black bears a year. They're trying to get people to harvest bears because we have so many of them. British Columbia, we don't do any baits. So it's not like a northern Alberta or Saskatchewan hunt where you're in a tree stand or over a bait or anything like that. These are all spot and stalk hunts. And we're doing them right in the mountains. So that time of year, the bears are coming out. What happens is they come out and they just walk downhill until they hit something green and they start feeding, and then they move back into the mountains. As they move back into the mountains, what we're hunting are these are the avalanche chutes. So in the high country, that time of year, the only thing that greens up are slides. And so what we'll do, I love hunting bears in the spring. I think it's such a cool hunt. But I mean, typical day, it's very gentlemanly. Bears don't get up early for the most part. So you wander out, try and get up somewhere high where you can glass a long ways. You'll see multiple bears every day here. And the biggest part of bear hunting, for anybody that hunts, but it's just judging size. So trying to find a bear, a big mature boar. But they really do kind of stick out in those slides. So they're easy to find. And then for us, it offers kind of some cool shooting scenarios where, some longer shots very much, might be required. These are tight little valleys. So lots of times, from one side to the other, we're 500, 600, 700 yards. And it's just, sometimes it's just the only way to get there. So, for somebody that likes the challenge and has the ability to shoot a little bit further, it's a pretty cool hunt in that, you're going to have some really good opportunities there.
So when you say high elevation, are we talking 6,000, 7,000, 8,000, or are we talking 8,000 plus? I don't know the area. Yeah. Sorry.
Sure. We're not actually that high. The ranch right here, I think we're sitting at 3,200 feet.
Oh, okay.
Once you get into the mountains, the elevation's not real high. You're only picking up probably another 1,500 feet, but you're getting into very, very steep mountainous terrain. Gotcha. So it's, you're literally hunting a valley and over and hunting another valley. It's right in the heart of the mountains.
So good. You have to be in some decent shape.
It helps. Yeah. It obviously helps. It's not, lots of times we're getting up glassing. So if we're making a stalk or something, it definitely helps. Lots of times, especially in the high country, that time of year, snow is a bit of a problem. So even though the south-facing slopes and the slides have all bared off, there's no snow, you walk into the trees and there could be 4 or 5 feet of snow. And it'll get you a little bit because in the morning, everything's firmed up. You can walk on top. Right. Coming back in the evening, you're breaking through. And for anybody that's, broke through up to your crotch, walking through snow for a mile, it'll kind of take you out of it. We carry snowshoes because literally half the, even though it's 20 degree or 75 degrees out, we can hit 4 or 5 feet of snow that we have to kind of get through. So it's just a cool time of year to be in the high country.
It sounds way cool. So yeah. Is this a 3-day hunt, a 5-day hunt, a 1-day hunt? What is the scenario that we should,
yeah. So, I mean, most of the outfitters here are going to want to sell that as like a 5-6 day hunt minimum. They're going to want to put you on a few different bears. Going to take you like at least a half a day to get into camp. And I mean, you can do it in a shorter period of time, and probably shoot a bear. If you want to try and harvest a big mature boar, you want to try and give your guide some time. lots of times the bears are moving, but they're not. So if you find a bear, you can kind of wait on him. So, you know, if you'd be like, eh, you know, that's probably a 6-foot bear, but let's look for a better one kind of thing. It's really nice to have the extra day. So I always recommended my hunters did a 6-day hunt, but they will do a shorter hunt, you know, if time just doesn't allow. Tags and licenses for non-residents are expensive. So you want to go ahead and try and give them as much time as you can.
Gotcha. Now, let's say everything goes well. We harvest a bear.
Yep.
Can you bring bears back from Canada to the lower 48, or the pelt, the meat, all that kind of stuff? Or is it something that has to stay there?
No, you can bring the whole thing back. By law, we are required to bring out all edible portions. So we pack the meat out. Spring bear is not the best meat you probably ever had.
That was my next question. Okay.
Yeah. It's just that they've been in the den all winter. It's not great. You can do stuff with it, but it's not great. But you're welcome to home. Your outfitter is able to supply, they're a CITES species, so they have to be inspected at the fish and game office here. But then you'll have a piece of paper that gets you across the border. Guys go both ways. Some guys will take the cape and meat and everything home with them. Other guys will leave the cape and have it taxidermied up here by one of the, you know, there's lots of taxidermists around, and the outfitter usually has somebody he works with. They'll build a skull and kind of do the whole thing for you. And then they just ship it to you. So you can kind of go either way. If you have a taxidermist at home you like working with, either way.
Nice. No, you said the meat's not very good. So are we talking about like straight ground? It's going to be a burger, and that's about it.
Yeah, and you're gonna want to mix something else with it, kind of dilute as much as can.
All right, fair enough. Now, let's say that they don't have 4 or 5 days to spend up there on a bear hunt. You said you do fly fishing and horseback riding and these other activities. Is that something that could be done as well?
Unfortunately, it's not this time of year. The resort's just not up and running, as in we don't have, staff and stuff in to do it. That's why they're going to let us shoot guns for the weekend. The fly fishing, because we're we'll be in spring runoff. So our rivers are going to be chocolate brown. So the fishing's just not any good that time of year. There's some lake fishing around. There's, lots of other stuff to do, resort type, resort community type stuff with ski hills and slides and, heritage towns and world-class golf and stuff like that. But unfortunately, the fly fishing that time of year is just not very good.
Gotcha. Okay. So it sounds like it's skiing, golf, or hunting bears.
Yep. That's pretty much what we do in the spring.
But the best part's going to be the match.
I think the match is going to be awesome.
Fantastic. I know we're still, a little bit away, but going back to the match, are we looking at like 18 stages, 20 stages? What do you guys think that you're going to pull off? And is there anything that we should particularly be prepared for, minus all the trees everywhere?
We're shooting for 18 stages. So I'm hoping to have 18 strong stages. Our days are stupid long that time of year. Like it's going to be daylight at 5 a.m. until 11 at night kind of thing.
What?
Really? Yeah. Super long days that time of year. So far north, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to shoot for 18 stages. I'm going to, we're going to front load it to Saturday. So we'll shoot at least 10 stages on Saturday, maybe 12, depending on kind of how our course of fire works out. Because I really want to kind of hit the midday mark on Sunday, have a nice meal. And then, because a lot of our shooters here have a bit of drive to get back home. So, and a lot of people have to go to work on Monday. So we're going to try and get them on the road as early as we can on Sunday. I really appreciate that when other march directors do it. So we're going to do our best to kind of facilitate that. Every one is having shot a bunch of these matches, and especially when I was new, I really did try to prepare differently for different matches. And I don't know, I just wondering, it didn't work. Right. So as a competitor, my advice, kind of be ready for whatever. I think any good match director is going to make you're going to shoot prone. You're going to shoot off of, there's going to be a couple tripod stages. There's certain components that it's going to have to happen. But I don't think there's nothing just different that somebody has to prepare for it. I don't think on my side.
Gotcha. It's just funny. Yeah. It's funny that the way you put it, because we forget, right? I mean, when we first started shooting, there was all of this anxiety and nerves about how to do this or what to bring or what not to pack or whatnot. And now that you've been doing this for, you know, several years, it's just kind of second nature. It's not a big deal anymore. So it's funny when you're like, prepare for whatever.
I remember Julian was my first match, which I've shot a bunch now. I still think that's one of the hardest venues as far as finding targets. I mean, I don't care who you are. It's not easy. I remember shooting with a poor guy. We were like seven stages in and he hadn't fired a shot. So yeah. It was challenging to find stage, but it was the first half day. It was just a yard sale. I mean, it took me 5 minutes after my time ran out to collect all of my gear that I spread all over. So, I think that's probably the biggest thing that I've personally learned through the NRL is just the efficiency of kind of managing my gear a little bit. That's what I like about the NRL. I mean, there's really, really no point in worrying about it before the RO says go, because you don't know what you're going to hit when you come around the corner. Maybe we're tripod, maybe we're prone, but you don't know. So that's why I say, you know, just prepare for anything, because, you know, ultimately that's, in my opinion, the best way to approach it.
Right. No, and that's definitely fair. I mean, you can't worry about what you don't know. Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, I mean, I would imagine that the people coming from the lower 48 are going to be people that have done at least one or two hunter matches before, but the people in Canada, this is going to be for a majority of them, their first time. So for our Canadian friends up there, you know, bring the stuff that you'd bring hunting. Don't feel like you have to go out and buy a bunch of new stuff or do any of that. Bring what you would hunt with. And I know it's going to be a little bit different, and it's hard because, you know, when I go to a match in the lower 48, I usually have a bunch of gear with me. But I would imagine even up there, there's going to be a community of people that have enough gear to share stuff with you and help you out and whatnot. So if you're kind of on the fence about, oh, this is going to be too much this way or too much that way, or I got to spend a bunch of money. It's the exact opposite. Just, you know, get your entry, bring what you got, and we'll make sure that, you know, you're going to have a good time and at the very least learn some stuff, and at the very most, you know, hit a bunch of targets.
Yeah. I think my match will have a higher than usual percentage of people that it's their first match. Right. You know, we're starting to get some of those questions and stuff, and it's funny because if I would have got the advice that I'm giving before my first match, I probably would have disregarded it because does my gun need to shoot? Don't worry about your gun. It doesn't have to shoot that good. You'll be fine. And yeah, you don't need all those bags, and, you know, just simplify it a little bit. And, you know, so it's, I'm a big proponent of bring whatever you got, bring a tripod and a bag. Other than that, you'll probably be able to figure out everything else.
Yeah, and again, everyone's there. You know, it's a competition. But I'm doing these air quotes, whatever. It's a competition. But at the end of the day, everyone's there to have a good time and help each other out. So, you know, ask questions, have fun, and just try it.
Yeah, and I'm lucky. I mean, before I ever agreed to do it, I made a bunch of guys up here that are very competent shooters promise me they'd come RO for me. So we're lucky in that we have some really good ROs. And you know, even for some of our new, I think in hindsight, for somebody that's never shot a match, if you show up and shoot skills at any match, but especially this one, you are going to learn so much. And I don't even care if you register as a competitor and change halfway through, you know, but just being able to interact with those ROs and getting that help, I think is hugely beneficial for kind of a new shooter that wants to just gain a ton of knowledge. You know?
Absolutely. I think the skills division is the best division far down for anybody who has never shot a hunter match. I don't care if you're a pistol professional, if you've done a PRS professional, I don't care, F class, doesn't matter. If you have never shot a NRO hunter match before, do the skills division, check, you know, whatever ego you may or may not have, and just come out and learn, because in the skills division, you will learn more in 2 days than you will learn in 10 matches if you try to figure it out on your own.
I agree 100%. And I attribute that to all of our ROs.
Absolutely.
And I think one of my favorite parts, I wouldn't be able to do a 2-day national match if it was not set up the way the NRL is with the RO shooting on Friday. I don't have a club close to me that can help. I don't have 20 friends who are professional shooters that are willing to give up their weekend. And especially in Canada, we're all so starved for matches that none of us want RO because we're not shooting.
Right.
So the NRL, like that, it solves that with Friday, right? Yep. So now we have, I have a huge list of people that are willing to come help me basically put on this match. And for the shooter, you're getting a high level RO. I mean, most of these guys are, you know, I anticipate half of these guys will be on the podium at the end of the shoot. So from a skills shooter perspective, if I told you for $180, I was going to put on a 2-day clinic with these 12 instructors, everybody knocked themselves down to go shoot it. Right.
Absolutely.
So it's just a huge learning opportunity. The PRS, I mean, I think the biggest knock for me on PRS is it's kind of intimidating. When you show up and everybody's packing around a $10,000 gun and jerseys and they all know each other, and it's very intimidating for a new shooter.
Right.
I would say the NRL is not that. People that are there for the most part are hunters typically before they're shooters, if right. That makes sense. And so I find it's a good breakover. It's very accommodating for new shooters.
No, I agree. And that's what we want the community to be, is we want it to be a platform to help people become better hunters. You know, personally, I don't care who the best shooter in the world is. That's what the PRS is for. And they do a great job at it. A lot of those best shooters, you know, in the world shoot NRO hunter as well. And so I get to see how they perform and what they do and learn from them. And all of you guys should as well, because when you get like you're saying, Tyler, when you get a group of high level shooters working together to make you better, I mean, that's knowledge that is very hard to come by, especially, you know, in a 2-day period at $180, or even if you spent full price at a couple $100. It's still a great value. I mean, classes down here, I know, you know, I don't know exactly what people charge, but I know they're several $100 a day for a 1-day class, and you're getting 2 days of class and a lot of shooting for, you know, a couple $100. So,
yeah. And I think some of the best advice I've gotten hasn't been in a big format. It's literally been somebody seeing me do something probably incorrectly and saying, why didn't you do this? And sometimes it's not obvious, right? I mean, we've all shot a stage and look back at it, and the RO goes, why didn't you just shoot it prone? And you're like, I don't know.
Right.
It's
Prone was an option.
So it's it I think it's I think it's hugely beneficial, obviously, and I wish more people, you know, would take the leap to expose themselves and really figure out how much there is to learn out there, because it's obviously a very cool sport, and our guns now and everything, we're in the right hands, they're so capable. But there is a bit of knowledge that comes along with it. So it's kind of, I put the onus on the hunter to obviously educate themselves. And I think that I'm not just talking about the long range game. I think all hunters have a responsibility to be better marksmen. And
absolutely. And
whether that's 100 yards or 200 yards or 800, I don't care. You need to be proficient proficient with your equipment. So whatever the best way for you to do that is.
And that goes for everything, whether that's a rifle, a muzzle loader, a bow. I mean, shit, even if you're using an atlatl or a spear, I don't care. You need to be, you know, as proficient as you can with the gear that you're using to take that life, because that's your responsibility as a hunter to be an ethical, efficient, you know, with that gear as possible.
Yeah.
So speaking of gear, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to mention, Chase shoots a lot of archery now. And for guys that shoot archery, I think it's blaring, because 30 yards, easy. 40 yards, that's right on the edge, right? And we don't do that with guns as well, I don't think, right?
No, we don't.
So I think there's something to be learned there from the archery guys, in that, like, just a little bit of difference, you know, or distance can make a huge difference.
It does. It's funny that you bring that, bring that topic up, because in the rifle world, 50 yards or 100 yards is not a big distance. But 50 yards or 100 yards on top of 400 yards is a big difference.
Exactly.
Right? And then when you start getting out further and further and further, it just compounds and extrapolates, and then more factors. And, you know, there's a lot more things that you have to take into effect. And, you know, archery, you know, 100 yards in archery is like 1,000 yards to a rifleman. I mean, it's completely crazy, but people have to realize every yard, even with the rifle, matters.
Yes. And I mean, just because you went out yesterday and hit a gong at 1,000 yards, in 2 hours, all of the parameters are going to have changed. You won't be able to make that same shot with the same information. So now you take that range time and try to apply it to a hunting scenario. So many factors have changed. You really have to reassess how you evaluate that shot, in my opinion.
I agree. I mean, things can change in an instant. And if you're not skilled enough to realize what that change was, that can mean the difference between a complete miss, which is your best scenario, or you wound an animal, which is the worst scenario. And if you get damn lucky, you take a lucky shot and you drop an animal. But at that point, if you're not skilled in being able to read the situation, it's going to take luck to make it a one-shot drop, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, the competition adds a little bit, but I've done lots of competition. I've gotten nervous at competitions, but nothing like hunting. Right. I mean, you know, that buck fever, whatever they call it. I mean, we wouldn't do it if it wasn't, we wouldn't do it if it wasn't kind of exciting on some level. So I don't care who you are. If you go hunting and you have zero emotion, I don't know why you're going. But we used to see it in our clients all the time as outfitters. I mean, and I've seen everything from, you know, guys just jacking all their shells out on the ground to breaking down in tears. And so there's a whole emotional side that comes along with it that we don't even practice for the most part. Competition, I guess, would be the closest we have. But I'm a big proponent of practicing and then being very, very realistic.
I agree. I 100% agree. I don't want to, like, I don't really like talking politics per se on our podcast, but I know that there's a huge a bunch of new gun politics going on in Canada right now, but there's also a huge push from the hunter side for more proactive hunting and more hunting rights. Is that correct still? I mean, how is the hunting situation overall in Canada? Like, let's say I wanted to book a hunt with you later on in the year. I just can't do it at the hunt, but I want to do it later on. How is the overall environment politically for hunters?
Yeah, I think there's two, I mean, so the gun control side apart, that's a whole separate political side. So far, it really has had no effect on the hunting side. If that's
good.
That's probably as far as anybody cared about. Where hunting still has there are a lot of hunters in Canada, still a very strong lobby. It's still very much accepted. If that makes sense, it's very much a part of life here. You know, everybody, especially in the regions that we live in, obviously if you go to major centers, it changes just a little bit.
Right.
The strength of hunting in general is, it's changing a little bit. So there's been some political decisions that you guys have the same problem. We have a predator problem. We have a predator problem, in Canada. For political reasons, that we don't manage our predators very well. Primarily that's grizzly bears for us and wolves. Okay. For somebody that's actually physically seen it, our little region here, we should have about 14,000 elk. Right now we're running about 7,000.
And wow. In half.
Yeah. And that's in probably a 6-year period. And further, it's actually changing their habits. So you go 10 years ago, June, July, August, you just didn't see an elk in the bottom of the trench. They were all in the high country. There was no people there. Feed was good. They made a good living up there. So why not? Now it's changed. That's where the grizzly bears live. That's where the wolves live. So our elk don't leave the trench anymore. They stay in the bottom. Hunting elk in the high country is more difficult because there's fewer of them. They have to move more because, you know, just the way the predators and stuff work up here. So I think it's a case where politics got in the way of good, sound wildlife management, if that makes sense.
Yep. Happening here now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been happening obviously for a while. So it has I would say that it has drastically affected our elk hunting. We just don't have the elk hunting we used to, you know, 20 years ago. The other species are still doing pretty good. Whitetail, obviously, everybody, they're everywhere. Our mule deer are pretty good. They do a better job for whatever reason of managing cats up here. So they hunt cougars pretty heavily. And that's kind of one of the bigger predators for the mule deer population. So oddly enough, our mule deer are coming back just a little bit. Anybody wanting to hunt any of the predators, cats, wolves, black bears, you know, there's some great hunting opportunities there. The sheep are still pretty good. I think over the next couple of years, you're going to see more restrictions on our sheep hunts up here. We still have some areas where as a resident, we can buy general open tags. And I think that's going to diminish just a little bit. What happens during COVID, none of our hunters could leave. None of us could travel. So everybody went sheep hunting. Everybody flew in a plane somewhere and went sheep hunting. So while it was good, it got a bunch of people exposed to it. It just put a lot more people back there. And most of the true sheep hunters, everybody's cool with it. I would rather only get to go every couple of years, maybe, but have fewer people there when I got there. So that's going to change. The predators have obviously impacted our moose populations. So yeah, I think wildlife management in general everywhere is kind of going through the same struggles a little bit.
So you said moose real quick. Is moose, I know you just said it changed a little bit, but is moose a big hunt in your area?
So we have the Shiras moose here.
I have no idea what that means.
Yeah, so I think there's four different subspecies, but the Shiras are a little bit smaller in that they're about two-thirds the size, and the horn mass is about two-thirds what the big northerns are. So gotcha. If you shoot, a Shiras moose, and 40-inch Shiras moose is a good Shiras moose, actually a big one. So we hunt some moose here, but it's not like the north. The northern half of British Columbia still has just unbelievable moose hunting, and I mean they get, I don't know if you've ever seen one up close, but when they say they get huge, I mean, they get freaking huge.
Yeah, I've never seen one. It's one of my bucket list animals.
Yeah, they're kind of cool to hunt. Like, when you hunt something, there's just general, you do not shoot one that's a long ways from the trail or from the road or that you don't have it. When you're moose hunting, the first thing you do is come up with a plan to get it out before you shoot anything, because they're just big. Yeah. So right. It's... they're 1600 pounds and great big old rack on them. But yeah, it's super cool hunt. Caribou are still pretty strong up north. We're spoiled in BC. I think we got three of the sheep species. We've got six different deer species for the last 4 or 5 years. All the cats, moose, two different species of moose. So we're kind of spoiled from a hunting perspective, and we're all, it's still pretty affordable. So I think all of my tags for all of my species are under $100, including my hunting license. And then our LEH, like our draw systems, I think it's $5 an entry. And so that's for $5, awesome. Technically I can get drawn for a stone sheep and away you go.
Okay, so now what does it cost roughly if I were to come from out of state to do something like that, like a sheep or a moose? Is it even possible?
Oh, very possible, yeah. I mean, 10 outfitters. So the way the quota system works up here, a certain percentage of, say you're going to take a management unit and they want to harvest 20 bull moose, the local, the resident hunters get a percentage of that, and the outfitter gets a percentage of that. So he'll maybe have four tags or something that he can sell. You have to go with an outfitter, you have to go guide it. That's the only way a non-resident can come to Canada or come to British Columbia and hunt. It's getting expensive. I don't know off the top of my head what a good moose hunt would be, but it's probably 15 to 20,000. Some of the sheep hunts are creeping up over 50 now. So yeah, I mean, the sheep guys they're just different. It's getting more and more expensive all the time. And then, obviously the Alberta, Saskatchewan guys, that's where your massive mule deer and whitetail are and stuff. I don't know if you've ever hunted them out there or seen it, but some of the deer they have are just, they're just absolute monsters. So it's pretty cool. I love hunting out there. Lots of spotting and stalking, seeing lots of deer and really just kind of looking for one of those monsters.
Man, you're making me want to come up there to hunt, but I got to save some money.
Yeah, it's not a cheap sport, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's, you don't, the way I look at it is I'm not paying to hunt per se, I'm paying for an adventure and experience, right?
100%. We used to run into this again when we were outfitting. We'd have guys shoot something on the first day, and I always felt a little bad for them.
Yeah.
Right. It's like you missed all, you missed that whole part of that experience. Yeah. The guys that got the best money were the ones that shot something on the last day.
Right.
You got the full episode.
Yeah. It's like knowing what the movie is before it even starts. It's like, what was the point,
Yeah. And I mean, some of the coolest stuff I've ever seen has been while I'm hunting and had nothing to do with actually hunting, So. Right. Some of the cool wildlife encounters and stuff is just the fact that you were out there doing something. So I always felt bad for the guys that just cared about harvesting something because they really didn't get as much out of it as the guys that were, you know, actually absorbing all of it, the horseback riding and the camp life and all the things you've seen and all those other things. So, it's an adventure. And
exactly.
It's a reason to go on an adventure. And if you happen to shoot something, great.
Exactly. No, that's how I look at it now is everything, you know, the whole package. It's not, you know, it's not just there to harvest an animal, you know, it's to experience what everything nature has to offer you, and the fun and funny parts and the suck that's funny, you know, 5 years later and the whole nine.
Exactly. So, that's what makes the adventure.
I did want to mention your title sponsor, MDT, right? Yes. So MDT has been a big supporter of the NRL Hunter Series for a long time. I know from talking to a couple of the guys over there, they're super excited to finally have a match in Canada. What are they going to be out, you know, at the match with some of their gear? Do you know any of, if they're going to do any kind of demos or any of that type of stuff, or we don't know any of that yet?
Absolutely. So, I mean, MDT is obviously a BC company. They're not particularly close to me. They're still like a 10-hour drive. But a bunch of the guys are coming out. Ryan and Josh will both be here. And then a couple of their pro shooters are going to come up as well. They're all RO1 for me. So that's super cool. Some of their management team's going to be here. They have a ton of stuff that they're bringing to the prize table. So, you know, you'll get to see, they've got some kind of cool new stuff coming out. Everything from bags to timers and, you know, it's stuff. I mean, obviously we all know their chassis. Right. I think the hunting market is just learning about the HNT. But you know, like my friends that are sheep hunters, when you talk to sheep hunters, are a little different. So they talk in ounces, right?
Oh yeah.
So like they just go googly over the HNT. But they'll definitely be some kicking around. The some of the youth up here are MDT and IBI and Apex have come together and built them a rifle that they're gonna. It's actually a lightweight hunter that they're gonna raffle off. So that'll be featured here. They'll have a bunch of product here for everybody and then plus all of our gear that's laying around. So they have their management team here and a bunch of shooters, so it should be cool.
Very cool. I know, I mean, we're getting close to that hour mark already. I just looked down at my clock and I'm like, wow, I can't believe it's been close to an hour already. Is there anything that I should have asked that I haven't asked? What are we missing here, Tyler?
I don't think so. Obviously, I'm easy to get a hold of. If anybody has questions about, you know, bringing guns in or flights or whatever, again, I kind of, in my real job, I deal with that stuff all the time. So, you know, if you tell me what state you're coming from and what airport, I can probably tell you what airline's going to get you wherever the fastest. So, you know, anybody has questions, by all means, please let me know. Obviously, any of the new shooters, I highly recommend you just give it a try with what you got. I know one of the barriers, people think they need to go buy a new rifle and buy a whole bunch of gear and stuff like that. You don't. Shoot what you got, bring a dope card and away you go. And there's a ton of people here that are going to be willing to help you. So, I think that's about it.
I'm going to add to your point right there real quick. So we just had a guy at the Colorado match shoot the entire match with a 300 Win Mag with no muzzle brake, just a good old boy hunting rifle. And he had the biggest smile on his face. So you really don't need anything fancy. Just come with what you got.
Yeah. And even, I even tell people, even if you think that you want to go buy a rifle, you don't know what you want yet. So go look at 100 of them. Then make an educated decision. So we got a bunch of our vendors that are going to come in Friday. So MDT is obviously going to have a bunch of stuff here. Leopold, Apex, Nosler is going to bring a booth down. So you're going to have a bunch of just product that you can lay your hands on and try. And you know, for all of us, I think when you're buying something, that's the best way to do it.
And what was the website for your ranch again?
Three Bars Ranch. So threebarsranch.com, spelt out T-H-R-E. Yeah.
Perfect. That way
you can kind of see. I think there's a link on our page on the match page. but you can kind of see the accommodations and the facility and kind of what we're all about. Like I said, we're not running the adventure packages that time of year, but still going to be a cool event, and we're looking forward to it.
I'm sure it's going to be absolutely fantastic. I'm stoked. It's going to be my first time to Canada.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've never been north. I've been to Mexico and all other places, but never been to Canada. So I'm super excited to get up there and to be able to hang out with you guys. I've got like no pressure, but I've got high hopes for the match.
Yeah.
Right. I think that, you know, we should also mention Darcy is putting on a match about a month and a half, two months after yours. Good.
Absolutely. So he's one exactly a month later than me. I think he's June 7th or something like that. He's in Southern Alberta. So it's about a 4-hour drive from me, and he's about an hour from Calgary. So major international airport there. So depending on when you're traveling stuff, that one might be better for some people to get to. Different, I should say. So he and his train is very much different than mine, much more like I would compare it to like a mountain home, as far as the train down there. So and you know, I know Darcy's committed to doing a good job. So he'll put on a good show too.
No, I'm super stoked, and who knows, in 25 maybe we'll have more than two matches in Canada.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I mean, a couple matches up here, maybe even a shortened Canadian series, and yeah, it'd be cool to see it grow. Like I said, I think the concept fits Canada, the Canadian consumer, real well. So I hope that it catches on up here.
I as well. So I'm super stoked to see what the future holds. I can't say more enough. I know this podcast is all audio, but I wish you guys could see it, and I have a big smile on my face because it's super exciting for me to be able to branch out to new matches, but also to break into Canada. So I'm super stoked and look forward to being up there with you guys.
Perfect. Yeah. Like I said, anybody has questions, we're easy to get hold of, and sign up and come shoot.
Perfect. Well, I really appreciate your time, Tyler. Whatever you guys need from us, you know how to reach me. But until then, you guys keep safe, keep shooting. We'll see you on a match, and we'll see you in Canada, eh?
Sounds good.
All right, guys, take care. Thank you so much for your time, Tyler.
You bet.
All right.